6, power in the blood.
I appreciate your presence here tonight. I feel a little bit like where are the nine, but I warned you that you were back to old stale biscuits tonight. Perhaps we can make the study worthwhile. I've been studying with you on Wednesdays, at least my class up here. We've been studying about the Ten Commandments. We're in Exodus, the 20th chapter. And right now we're on the second commandment. That's where we're going to be Wednesday night. But I wanted to skip ahead a little bit in that series and study with you a little bit more about the 10th commandment tonight, which is, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. This command is a little bit different in that series of ten. I commented when we started studying them that it's obvious that the series of the Ten Commandments is divided into two major sections. The first section is the first four, which are commands related to God. And the second one, the six continuing, are commands obviously related to men in their relationships with one another. In 1 John 4, in verse 8, the scripture says, he who does not love does not know God, for God is love. The Lord requires us, expects us, to desire the best for our neighbor. He illustrates that in place after place after place. In the New Testament, we've seen it was summarized. What's the greatest commandment? Love the Lord thy God, the first four commands. What's the second like to it? Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Comprises the second six of this group. But this last command, this tenth, is different in that most of the Old Testament dealt with outward fleshly sort of concerns. In Hebrews 9, verses 9 through 10, he says, this is a figure for the time present, according to which are offered both gifts and sacrifices that cannot, as touching the conscience, make the worshiper perfect, being only with meats and drinks and divers washings, carnal ordinances imposed until a time of reformation. And in fact, most of those personal commands are of that sort. But this command, this 10th commandment, goes directly and is discussing directly the heart of man, and how that heart was to be in relationship to his neighbor. The others, that he's not to steal from him, he's not to bear false witness, he's not to commit adultery and so forth, all deal with sins, outward sins. But this one deals with the heart. And the Lord's concerned with that, in that sort of notion, that sort of idea. And so this commandment rises completely above civil law. Really, it's really kind of hard to make a law that governs covetousness. You can't really do it. There has to be some outward manifestation of the coveting. But this commandment was the only commandment that strictly dealt with the heart, which was inward. And so it leads us really to the New Testament, which was far more concerned with the heart. He says in Romans 2, he is not a Jew which is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew who is one inwardly. And circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men, but from God. Sometimes we get so hung up on those outward commands. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. That we forget that this 10th commandment comprised the basis and root of it all. Thou shalt not covet. Something going on in the heart, particularly. All sin, the New Testament says, springs out of the heart. That's where it originates. In Matthew 15, verse 18, the things which proceed out of the mouth come forth out of the heart, and they defile the man. Those things we do didn't start with our fingers. They didn't start with our eyes or ears. They started in our hearts and are only manifested. What's in our heart is manifested by those things that we do. When we commit adultery or in its various forms, we manifest what's in our heart. When we steal, we manifest what is in our heart toward our neighbors. When we bear false witness, when we lie, we manifest what's in our heart toward our neighbors, toward our society. Out of the heart come forth evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, railings. These are the things which defile the man. To eat with unwashing hands defileth not the man. But as you think about that, you might also look at Romans 7, verse 7. The Lord reveals the whole purpose of the law, the entire purpose of the law, with this 7th commandment, with this 10th commandment. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? Certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law. For I would not have known covetousness unless the law had said, you shall not covet. But sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all manner of evil desire. For apart from the law, sin was dead. That basic commandment that condemned a man for what he desired in his heart, the evil that he desired in his heart. But you might look at some terms. What does the word covet mean? Well, it means to fix the desire upon things, whether good or bad. To fix desire, whether good or bad. And at the same time, the term envy is allied with it. It is the feeling of displeasure produced by witnessing or hearing of the advantage or prosperity of others. And so we covet and we envy. We covet the things of our neighbor and we envy his position. I'm going to stop for just a minute while we get some hearing devices for some folks. And I don't know what I'm going to do while I stop. How is everybody tonight? I hope you're well. We had some folks come in that need some of the Spanish translation, so we're going to stall for just a minute. It's good to see all of you boys here. Liz, obviously, part. I was hoping those folks would be back to preach tonight. Then we'd have Liz's 5 and that family's 7, and my goodness, we'd have just a crowd of kids here tonight. But they must have wanted to meet some other friends or family somewhere else in maybe the city or the area. How are we coming back? There, Sushila is. There you go. All right, let's move on just a little bit with these terms. You break down those into layman's terms, and covetousness is the feeling I have toward an item or a thing or a person that I would like to have. Envy is the feeling I have toward you because you have it. So covetousness is what I want. Envy is the attitude I have towards you because you have what I want, or that thing I want, or that person that I want. The common denominator of both of those is that they are geared toward either a person or a thing that does not belong to me. It's not mine. Well, why does the Lord forbid coveting? You know, it seems so allied with ambition. We all want to get ahead, don't we? Well, first of all, covetousness sets my heart on earthly things. You remember what Exodus 20 said. It said, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. It doesn't belong to you, it belongs to your neighbor. God offers the few objects of covetousness in this 17th verse for our consideration. Have you ever compared your house to other people's? Have you ever wished you had your neighbor's house? He's got a bigger house, nicer. It's painted maybe and yours isn't. It's newer than yours. It's got newer appliances. He got a new roof. You didn't. Have you ever wished you had your neighbor's house or his wife? Have you ever compared your mate to his or hers? He seems like he mows the lawn. He gets up and fixes the house. Yours is in disrepair. She dresses up. She smells good. And she looks pretty. Are you coveting your neighbor's wife? Envious because he has her and you don't? Or your servant? Have you ever compared your tools? Nathaniel's the worst about that. He bought a new tool the other day, and he said, Oh, Dad, you're going to be jealous. And he began to describe this wonderful tool that he bought, which I have looked at many times and don't want. But anyway, we'll let that go. Have you ever wished that you had his stuff, his tools, or his car, or maybe that good job he's got? My goodness, he doesn't hardly turn a tap and he gets paid big bucks. Wouldn't it be wonderful? What about his sports ability? You ever wish that you were better at sports? You ever wish that you were like that other fellow? Or you ever wish that you had a good marriage or that you were married? Or did you ever covet clothes or a bank account? Or, my goodness, that guy cuts a handsome figure, or that woman cuts a beautiful figure. I wish I had her figure. I believe I'll go to the gym and work myself silly for the next 6 months trying to get her figure. You're going to go to the gym because you covet? Come on, get a grip. Maybe you need to lose a little weight and get in better shape, but surely that's a lousy reason. Or their children. I've seen people who coveted their neighbor's children. Maybe they couldn't have children. And lo and behold, Sister Smith turns up pregnant, and it really makes you angry. You wish you were. You covet. Something to be careful about. You know, it sets your heart again on earthly things. All of those things that I just mentioned, all of those things mentioned in verse 17, all of those objects are part of this life. Do you see that? The here and now, the car, the wife, the figure, the property, the house, the tools, the children. They're all part of this life. And it set your heart on that. That suddenly become your focus. And the Lord warns us in 1 John 2, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And suddenly you've become a coveter of stuff. And it's obsessing with you, and it's causing a problem to you. Have you ever asked yourself, you've been to a funeral, probably most of you have, wonder what he wants now? He's out of wants. He doesn't want anything. You know, the rich man, he wanted to go back and fix things for his brothers. That we wanted that, but that was about it. And he couldn't get there. He wanted a drop of cold water from Lazarus, but life had gotten a lot simpler. Colossians 3, where we read, if then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. What do you want those things for now? Why is suddenly a big house and a nice car and a good bank account and a pretty wife and a lot of kids, sports ability, why has that become your goal in life? When Christ is our life, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Therefore put to death your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. You know, this is just an aside point I want to call to your attention. I was studying about fornication the other day. Have you ever noticed in several of the lexicons comment on it how many times fornication and covetousness are linked in the Bible? Same idea. One issues out of the heart and results in behavior called sexual immorality. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them. You know, our heart is supposed to be set where God is, not on this stuff. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The Lord was concerned about where you were putting that desire, where you were, your heart was aimed. There's a lot of people who are clinging so tightly to earthly possessions of one sort or another that they're going to have to be dragged into heaven kicking and screaming if they make it. He said, take heed and beware of covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of things which he possesses. Secondly, covetousness puts a barrier, fence between neighbors. Notice that in verse 17 back there of Exodus 20, all those things belonged to my neighbor. They were all his. You know, in our society, we've gotten to where we're really worried about what wealthy people have. They got too much. We need to have some of that. What is that? That's covetousness. It's some sort of cultural, governmental covetousness. What do you care what's his? How he got it? How he comes by? It's his. It's my neighbor's. I don't have any business worrying about it. It makes us angry. Well, it makes me angry. I've been angry ever since the state of Indiana decided to allow gambling. Do you know gambling can't exist without covetousness? You know, the other day, I don't know what, this big lottery got up to $600 million or something? How do you, what were you doing when you listened to those big figures? It got a sign when I drive north. It's right behind the atheist sign. The atheists are advertising, and then the government's advertising for my covetousness. So there's a lot of anti-Christian stuff going on the highway going north. Advertising how much the lottery is now. What are they appealing to? Your covetousness. Those things belong to my neighbor. And so this puts a sort of enemy-like competition between neighbors. Haven't you seen, you know, when four or five people all go in on the same lottery ticket and then they win? Sometimes somebody gets ruled out. What's my attitude supposed to be in Romans 13? You shall not commit adultery. You shall not murder. You shall not steal. You shall not bear witness. You shall not covet. If there is any other commandment, all are summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. No barrier. I don't want anything that's his, unless he decides to sell it. It's hard to love when a covetous spirit takes over our life. Are you envious when your neighbor succeeds? He comes home saying, hey, I got a great new job. Look, I bought a brand new car. You envious? Boy, they sell all the car ads that way. We're all supposed to be jealous because our neighbor brought home a new whatever kind of car. Do you laugh when he fails? Inside, you don't do it outside. You're too good for that. But inside, say, well, Jones over there, that guy's so hoity-toity. He got fired today. I guess he won't be lording it over me anymore. It's a barrier. Your covetousness, your envy, has made a barrier between you. Romans 12:15 tells us to rejoice with them that rejoice, and weep with them that weep. It's going to be hard to do with covetousness in your attitude and heart and mind. As you think about that barrier, you might read Titus 3, the first three verses. Remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. For we ourselves were also once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful and hating one another. Isn't that what our society is devolving into? You remember some kids, I guess kids are younger than me, burst into a house up here and abused the people? And when they asked him, why did you do that? He said, well, they had a big house. They had more than I had. All they did was hate them because they had a big house and had more stuff than them. Now, when you get to worrying about what's wrong with our society, you don't have to go far. It's covetousness. Why are these people out stealing and robbing, hurting one another? It's hatred and covetousness. Real simple. Not profound. It's real simple. What's going to solve it? Well, we need a government program. You need to teach the Bible. You mamas and daddies need to teach your children the Bible. Make sure they have that heart. Put it in their lives. It's not going to go away before them. A lot of people, a lot of Christians need to be in the bridge building business. How do I build a bridge over all those barriers I've erected between me and my neighbor? In James 4, whence do wars and fightings come from among you? Where do they come from? Why is there such hatred in this country? Do they not come from your desires for pleasures that war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. Covetousness, 10th commandment. Think with me just a little bit further about that. Was John the Baptist upset when Jesus began to be successful and more people began to follow him than Jesus? His reply to a disciple was simply, he must increase, but I must decrease. It was all right. It was all right that someone else was concerned. You don't realize how dangerous it can be. Are you patriotic to the point of hating people in other countries? Ah, those Russians. You can't trust them. Ah, those Arabs. We're going to have to go to war with those guys. Are you so patriotic that you have all that hatred? Does your school spirit cause you to wish evil upon your arch rivals? You think Xavier's going to beat Butler there, Luke? Probably. Would you be glad if a Butler player broke his leg so that it was worse? Good. I appreciate that, Luke. A little skeptical, but I appreciate that. But you know, a lot of people are. Ooh-wee. Say, that's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that sort of hypocritical statement. Does your family pride force you to hate anyone who speaks evil against your family? My aunt, my uncle, my mom, my dad, my kid. You better not talk about my kids. Why? Your kid's special? You got a barrier there. Are you jealous of other churches? You know, there's two or three churches around us that are bigger than we are. You jealous of that? They got better preachers. They got handsomer men, prettier women. I don't know. They're better than we are. I don't know what's going on. Does that bother you? Maybe we should hate the sin and love the sinner. We've got to get to where we do that. And you know, covetousness doesn't stop with just coveting. It causes us to break other commands. The desire causes us to spread out just a little bit. Covetousness can lead to having other priorities besides God, obviously. It can lead to my being willing to make a false oath and using God's name thereby inappropriately. It can lead to dishonoring, not to honoring our parents, the honor they deserve. Why? Because I'm so busy coveting. It did in the Bible. He said, I don't want to have to support my parents when they're old, and so I'll come up with this scheme. You're so jealous of your money, you won't take care of your mom and dad when they get old. What do you think that is? That's covetousness. And you've allowed your covetousness to lead you to break this other commandment. Covetousness will cause you to murder. It'll cause you to commit adultery. It'll cause you to steal. It'll cause you to lie. All because it's all driven by those things in your heart. That desire that you'll do anything for. Where did that all come from? Well, didn't it come from a dissatisfaction with what God gave you? A dissatisfaction with what He gave you? He gave you that old beat-up car. You've got it paid for now. You can manage to put gas in it. You're going to be jealous, envious, covetous. of your friend's car that's better? You're unhappy with what God's given you so far? It can lead to a dissatisfaction with the way God hands out blessings. Why do I covet it? Well, God seems to be favoring you more than me. He needs to be favoring you Americans more than me. It's not fair. I'm just as good. He seems to be favoring you white people, you brown people, you yellow people, more than me. It's not fair. You know, I've heard a lot of people fussing about all of the Orientals that are scoring so well in our schools. They're taking all the valedictorian prizes. So everybody's decided we're going to do away with that valedictorian thing. Because all the Orientals are winning it. What's wrong with that? You dissatisfied that they worked harder or they're smarter than your kid? It's causing you to break other commands. Do you count your blessings or are you calculating? Whoops, I didn't get as many as George. I've been shortchanged on the blessings department. You know, that's the way a lot of people think. George has got more than me. The Lord, that's not what that song says. Count your many blessings, name them one by one. It doesn't say compare them to the guy next door and be jealous and envious and angry at him because you think he got more blessings than you did. As well, you might think about this. James describes this process. He says in James 1, each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it has the opportunity to do something. It gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. So you've got that in your heart. And it's going to bust forth some way or another. Some way or another, it's going to show itself in your life. You know, in the Old Testament, Achan described that process. The Bible says, he says, indeed, I have sinned against the Lord God of Israel, and this is what I've done. When I saw among the spoils a beautiful Babylonian garment, 200 shekels of silver, and a wedge of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them and took them. God had said, you don't take anything out of Jericho. But he said, I coveted them. I wanted them. And he violated God's command. Why should God give you more when you're not grateful for what you've got? Why do you think you're spending all your time griping about where you are in life and what your pay is and how many children you have and what wife you have? Why should he give you something better? You're not grateful for how far you've got. You're spending all your time desiring the better. And ultimately, it's going to destroy you. If we focus so much on the blessings other people receive, we'll forget to take advantage of what we've received. And you look in 1 Corinthians 12, turn over there with me, I'm going to really read a section, starting in verse 12. He says, as the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of the body being many are one body, so also is Christ. For in one spirit were we all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, bond or free, and we're all made to drink into one spirit. But the body is not one member, but many. If the foot shall say, because I'm not the hand, I'm not of the body, it is not therefore of the body. And if the ear shall say, because I'm not the eye, I'm not of the body, it is not therefore not of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? But now hath God set the members, each one of them, in the body as it pleased him. And if they were all one member, where were the body? Now there are many members, but one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of thee. Or again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much rather those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary, and those parts of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon those we bestow more abundant honor. Some of their members felt useless because they didn't have the same gift other people had. They forgot to do something with what they had. Do you feel useless in the church because you can't do something somebody else can? What are you doing with what you got? The time and opportunity and the intelligence and the Bible knowledge. What are you doing with what you have? Or are you spending all your time wishing you were somebody else? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever for a pole vaulter to get upset at the success of a swimmer. You're not a swimmer, you're a pole vaulter. Do you wish you could get more medals in the Olympics? There's only one pole vault event. There's about 1,000 swimming events. It works against the church for us to be jealous and envious of one another. It's a waste of time. Are you content to do the best at what you can do? You know, sometimes, don't you wish? Can you imagine a silly flower that wishes, oh, I wish I was in good soil. And I wish I was in soil where I was cared for and everyone would get rid of all the weeds. The gardener would get rid of the weeds for me and water me every day and put fertilizer on me and just baby me along and make sure that the temperature around me was controlled so that I could blossom and grow. Or are you going to bloom where in the world God put you? He may have planted you in the weed patch. Can you bloom there? You're going to have to be content with the sun that you get and the rain you get. He says in 1 Timothy 6, now godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can't carry anything out. And having food and clothing with these, we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. What's the love of money? Well, that's covetousness, isn't it? For which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and gentleness. It will destroy you. This is a story by a fellow named Bob James. He had some stinging ants. Maybe there were those fire ants down in the south. And he decided he had to get rid of them, and so he put some poison in a circle around the ants. Now, the idea is that this is sort of food that the ants like, and they began to grab that and haul it down into their nest. And the idea is for them to consume that, and eventually the nest gets killed out. But as he was noticing the circle of poison, he noticed that somehow or another there was a different bunch of ants that had gotten jealous of that nice food that those stinging ants had, and they were hauling it off a different direction, not realizing that they were hauling poison back to their own nest. Now, you know, a lot of us are destroying ourselves with the same poison. God forbids covetousness because it sets my heart on earthly things. He forbids covetousness because it erects a barrier between me and my neighbors that I'm supposed to love. He hates covetousness because it leads me to break other commands that he gave me. It's the motivation. It's the driver. It's what causes those things. And he hates covetousness because eventually it's going to destroy me. It's going to destroy all of us. So quite simply tonight, are your desires under control? This commandment strikes further than any civil law. You know, the law can say, thou shalt not commit adultery. But God says, thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife. The law can say, thou shalt not steal. But God can say, thou shalt not desire your neighbor's stuff. The law can say, thou shalt not murder. But God can say, the man who hates his neighbor has murdered him already. It goes to the heart of the matter. It gets down and tests our spiritual loyalty, what's in our hearts. Why would we desire something God has forbidden us? That's a quite simple question. Why would we lust for things outside of what God has commanded for us? We've not yet learned self-control. And that starts, it starts with our motives and our desires. God wants you to be saved. Are you content with the sacrifice of his son, the plan of salvation, and the need to obey his will? Are you looking for something more, something else? If you're here this evening and not a Christian, and will be one, the Lord will purify you body and soul, heart, and activities as well. Come while we stand and sing.